This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora, welcome to Free Left Turn, the left wing's perspective on Free FM 89.0.
Independent. Good morning,
Craig. Morning, Mickey. You're up on the mark.
I'm up with a lark, you know. All's well with the world.
Kia ora, Fred.
Oh, good morning. Morning, mate.
He's got a notepad.
Did he remember who we were?
Yeah. I had an early start. My dog decided to be sick at 20 to 4 in the morning.
That's an early one.
And it was, you know, just time I got that sorted, I was sort of awake, as you are, and then it was like, I heard a couple of birds chirping, and that was it.
It seemed bird call seems to be getting earlier and earlier these days.
Some of them start.
It's like 4:30.
Yeah, it was 4:30 then when I first heard the first birds.
Well, one time I was up and that's a bit early.
The break of dawn.
It was still dark, and the birds are having a go, starting to wind up.
And then I heard a bird. It was a monotonous sort of squeak, and I thought, I wonder what that is. And I was thinking, never heard that before. So I go out, I'm getting a bit deaf in my old age, go out, open the door, and it was my washing machine. So I probably own to wash that stuff on the dog.
I always remind you it's finished.
It's quite different type of bird.
Yeah.
On the news, there's been a few things. I think
there'll be lots.
Lots of things, I should say, and some of them are not. I was just trying to look for a positive one, but I couldn't really find one.
One that
I can mention, and I heard this on the news yesterday, and we had this film about the Pike River disaster. What it was actually saying, what they were talking about was New Zealand has the highest rate per capita of workplace deaths compared to Australia, twice as much, and four times as much as the UK.
Is that because we don't have a strong health and safety department and unions? Our unions are probably weaker.
They've got the legislation, haven't they? It's just not enforced.
Yeah, this is what there's been a report done, and the lead reporter was from the Victoria University, a person called Chris Peace, War and Peace.
Yeah.
He is saying that there needs to be changes around such things as better enforcement, higher penalties, and clear guidance for businesses around obligations and safety workplace benefits.
Well, I can imagine Mr. Seymour won't be impressed with that. He wants to get rid of regulations.
Well, can I just add that the reality is, in the old days of compulsory unions, etc., there still were accidents happened, etc., but without unions in the workplace,
how are you going to enforce it?
You're at the decision of the owner and the managers.
Usually motivated by money.
Profit. Yeah. Well, it can be. Yeah,
there was an article that came out. This is where it came from, the Herald, yesterday, the 14th.
Although, I'm surprised that we're worse than Australia and...
It's per capita.
Per capita, UK.
Yeah, and UK four times worse.
Is that because there's no jobs in the UK at present?
We are deemed as having one of the worst records of workplace health and safety in the developed world.
Good grief.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I really am.
Yeah, we are. And I know it was cheekily said.
I knew it wasn't perfect, but I didn't realise it was as bad as...
Well, we have a lot of farm accidents.
forestry accidents.
And forestry.
And fishing. And people and not going out to sea and not fishing.
And obviously the odd mine tragedy.
Yeah.
What about shootings? Does when we had that atrocity, and does that go under accidents or something else?
Be something else, I suspect.
Yeah.
Well, even then, you have shooting and hunting accidents, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably different, isn't it?
That'd be but it's supposed to be governed by regulation. People are supposed to follow certain guidelines.
Yeah, when you're working, etc.
Whatever you're doing, you're supposed to follow certain guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cheekily said that our current minister in that space was the Minister for Unsafe Workplaces. But it kind of, and seeing that sort of figures, kind of makes me think, we're not.
We, the taxpayer, pick up the tab for the AC coverage and all
for the workplace injuries
and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and the deaths as well.
Pay
your ACC stuff.
Well, training is part of your a job, and that often it happens. You think, oh, you just jump on that and off you go.
I remember the hoo-ha when OSH all came out and all this workplace safety. The responsibility wasn't just on the employer, the responsibility is supposed to be on the employee as well.
Yeah.
It's a two-way thing.
We
joint responsibility. But
what young 18, 17-year-old is going to question his boss if he thinks something's not right, you know?
Yeah.
We have a work and health and work safety stuff in our workplace. We have part of our staff meetings does in wrap around that.
Yeah.
So we've got to identify things that are unsafe and stuff like that.
Fire exits and all that sort of stuff.
And there's other things like that.
We see it every day on the roads. You know, the road signs are actually health and safety. You know, people go, like Mike Hosking might go, I can drive as fast as I like sort of thing. But actually, they get all our road signs are informative and to keep you safe.
Yeah.
That's sort of the idea of it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a twisty bend. Says you to go 70 and an arrow going around a corner. That means that's the safe speed to go around. You know?
Not reckless speed.
Yeah.
That's what they're all for. Even the road cones are there.
People still break the rules even though...
They do, but at least they're informed.
Well, they can't plead ignorance.
There's a lot of things in place that prevent these sorts of things happening. Drug testing of people, especially the operating machinery.
Oh, absolutely.
So that caught my the other thing that I was focused on was a retirement report.
I saw that too.
The retirement commissioner.
They released a report.
I've got the article here.
Oh, cool.
I'll
give you the Māori name for your mix. Tiara Ahunga Ora.
Thank you. I was going to ask you for interpretation. This was for the benefit of listeners. This was in the Waikato Times yesterday. And the headline reads: New Zealand must end pensions divide, says commissioner. And Retirement Commissioner Jane Wright says wish list for a better retirement system includes an end to political bickering over pensions, piecemeal tinkering with Kiwi Saver, and a cross-party 10-year retirement income roadmap.
And it
goes on and on. It's quite sensible.
I still believe in the fact that we've missed the boat by quite some years.
She's saying...
Well, we had that big...
Sorry, she was saying we should follow the example of Finland and Sweden. You've got a much better system. It's a cross-party.
Our ageing population,
My sort of thinking was, we had the baby boom generation, which
us.
Was, us. For those born in 1945 up to 1964. So what should have really happened if you had a vision was to say, well, we'll have an ageing population. When the first baby boomers started working, the plan should have been for aged care, infrastructure, superannuation.
Wasn't the Cullen Fund?
No, this is earlier. I'm thinking what we should have been thinking long term. But the Norman Kirk thing and the Cullen Fund were things that should have happened earlier. Aged care, housing, health, super, retirement plan, those should have been done earlier on. because there was a lot of people. There was a lot of people born in that time.
Yeah, then you would think government departments would have done projections.
Yeah, well, exactly.
They must have known. Well, by this time, the X number of people, and so on and so on. Our service is going to be able to respond. Like, by 2078, they reckon there'd be 2.6 million people over the age of 65 in New Zealand.
I saw a brief clip on the telly last night, and it was something about in 1950 or 60, there was one retired person for so many workers.
Yeah.
And now it's reversed. That's the sort of thing. Yeah. I had a brief look at the review this morning. It's online under the Retirement Commission. And it is full of papers of what's going to happen and trajectories and all that, but I didn't get time to have a real look at it.
She's very good, though, because...
She spoke well on the telly.
She's asking for periodical making... She can only make recommendations.
They can,
That's the nub. But also wants to see a ban on so-called total remuneration contracts, which allows employers to pay KiwiSaver employer contributions out of the agreed salary rather than on top. So some employers are doing some nasty stuff.
It's included in the package.
Retirement Commission is tasked with periodically making recommendations to government for how to improve the system. New Zealand government's retirement income system is based on providing basic universal taxpayer-funded NZ super to everyone, but through KiwiSaver, it is also designed to support and encourage people to amass their own private wealth or resources to supplement it, which is not enough for most people to live on. Yeah, I mean, I live solely on the super.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And, yes, things are getting a bit tight.
We know that.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate that where I live, I'm paying well below market rates for rent.
Yeah.
But that's an arrangement between me and my landlady. But the on average between 2019 and 24, the near hardship rate was 3% for homeowners aged over 65 without a mortgage, 12% for those still paying a mortgage, and 31% for private renters receiving the accommodation supplement.
Yeah, which
is something I get. I get part of my pensions boosted with the accommodation supplement.
Yeah.
The list goes on and on, but she's basically calling for a bipartisanship approach to this.
Yeah, there has to be.
It's just,
I think we're behind the eight ball quite significantly, and the information that tells us that is in healthcare, aged care, way behind there, and you brought up the housing part,
and employment rates are starting to creep up too. Yeah. Oh, it's a global thing too.
Yeah, it's global. No,
can I just play devil's advocate on it? Is that good on all these people that are making these things. But they're all wealthy. They all have good salaries. I'm talking about the old people and all this. The people who are making all the decisions, and it goes back to the politicians and the recommendations, how much they've got information, but they don't know what it feels like to be poor.
No, they don't.
And it is in the back of their minds.
But that's why you need a commissioner.
Of course you do. And good on her for dinner, but she still won't actually... She can have empathy.
It's a more of an academic problem rather than, but she has got some empathy.
Yeah.
But she's obviously long-term vision. She's obviously worked this out and done her own projections and seen,
absolutely. And they all have, and they've got the skills and all that to do it.
So they've got the possibility to do it, whether the political will to do act on these things.
Yeah. The responses are like raising the age of the pension, I'd say, national said, is 67 by 2044. Well, that's a negative response.
It's about saving money.
Yeah, well, that's not actually answering the question.
It's just pushing it down the road.
Yeah, that's a Keynes scenario, as that's been talked about before.
Yeah. I thought she was very good, though.
Yeah, I do too. I thought she was very good.
She came across very well. So, but the thing is...
I would just like to see and I know they probably do interviews of people who are poor and all that, but it would be just like a bit more, all right, these five people get invited down to Wellington to discuss their experiences. So it makes it
real. That's good. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I think there's a, you know, And a lot of people go, well, they should have just worked hard for their money like I did.
Well,
that's still an attitude that's out there amongst a lot of people who are doing well.
They don't want to think about the nitty gritty.
No, I know, but
they want to think of details.
No, they don't worry about circumstantial stuff.
Nothing
to see here.
That's where she's battling against, even though she might have some privilege, obviously has, but at least she's trying to tell people what's happening, you know. So
because this problem is
we know it's getting worse because we're not replacing ourselves and we're aging population.
Yeah. And the people who are getting older live longer. Mm. They come from a generation where basically families were asked to produce children.
Mm.
You know, mum, dad, three children.
Benefits of universal health and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So good honour for... Well, it was good to have the reports to do it. It's what happens from here.
Are they going to act on it?
And let's face it, go back on KiwiSaver. Yeah, it's a little thing. But if you're on 40,000 a year minimum, if you've got a job and you're paying and you're... What's the KiwiSaver? 2%? 3%?
Well, it can be, something like that.
You can pay more or whatever. Mm.
Depends on the employer.
But it's not a lot of money each year. So $800 or $1,000, you get another $250.
The way inflation keeps racking up.
And what I'm getting at is, it sounds a lot, but you end up, say you'd been a good little saver and from that, and you've got your 30, you've got $50,000 when you retire.
But the buying power of that $50,000 is a lot less than it was when you first started.
Yeah, so it's good that they have got a little bit of a nest egg, but it's only a very small nest egg compared to the farmer and to the elites. You know, and that's what I'm sort of getting at is, it is, but it's not a huge difference.
I agree.
Have an emergency or something else, but unless they've got a way of replacing that, once they've fixed the car or painted the roof, if they're lucky enough to have a house or something's happened, it goes pretty quick, $50,000.
It does. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Buying power is continually shrinking.
I'm probably not explaining it very well,
Because I'm lucky 50, because
50
I'm,
grand 30 years ago is not the same as $50,000 now in terms of buying power.
And it doesn't go very far.
No.
I'm actually lucky because I'm still paying into a KiwiSaver.
Yeah.
And I think we got into it fairly early on.
Yeah.
So you do build up an amount of money, but you look at the money and you look at what's going to happen in the past, like medical stuff. You may have to move because you can't live there anymore. You may suffer from a cognitive decline, so you go into aged care.
Life throwing a spanner in the works.
I was in KiwiSaver, so was my wife. I got ill from cancer, and so I left work, badly diagnosed, diagnosed with a bad result. I ended up with $30,000 in my KiwiSaver account, which is, blessing, $30,000 is $30,000.
Yeah.
But as I say, it's still in the bigger picture of the thing. It's not a huge amount of money.
No.
So we shouldn't I think there's some sort of push. Oh, well, we just have a KiwiSaver and everyone will be fine. That's fine if you're earning $200,000 a year and you're a saver and you've got your own home plus other wealth. But what about someone who's just reliant? It's still not going to change.
Yeah, like you had your example, Mick. You only rely on the New Zealand saver. You don't have anything extra.
No. And will they then turn around if the attitude is, well, they should have saved in KiwiSaver rather than pay the right pension?
Then it comes back to my point that the establishment of a national superannuation scheme earlier on as a vision would have helped this sort of thing.
Well, and now,
basically it should be state-run. Not privatised, because they had problems in the UK with pension schemes, but went belly up.
And I'd quite happily accept means testing.
I totally agree.
Because at the end of the day, I can, if I've got $100,000 in the bank, that's a bit of money, but there's some people worth $10 million and they still get the pension.
Still
working and still get the pension.
Yeah.
You know, if we're really serious, we need to get the money to people that
really need it.
Well, another thing is, when the numbers going up, they're going to have to start triaging. Who does get access to aged care help?
That's the issue too.
Because we're not geared up for 2.6 million.
And if everyone paid the fair amount of taxes, then I wouldn't be for means testing or anything else. As we now know, the elite only pay 9 to 10% tax.
Begrudgingly.
And that's, so... if we had a system that everyone paid their fair share, I'd say, well, no, I don't mind if Ben's got $5 million, but look, he pays $400,000 a year in tax. Let him have the pension. He's looked after. I'm looked after. Everybody's. But it's very hard, and Mick knows firsthand, very hard just to live on your pension. I can't. I don't live on my pension.
I understand that,
And unfortunately, I don't have to, but I'd hate to be in that situation.
Yeah. And I've got Margaret's approaching pension age early next year.
Right.
But I'll be still working.
Yeah.
So kind of more comfortable off than Mick.
And single people, like it's... Cheryl was sick and dying, and so... With the joint pension, she got the pension, she was delighted to get the pension before she died.
Yeah, I understand.
And she was like, wow, I've lived this long. So, you know, she's a heavy smoker, so it wasn't like a tragedy as such. It was just the results of it. She got the pension and was like, oh, my God, I've lived this long. But two of us with the pension, we were just about level. But that $200 or $300, $400 less a fortnight I get means I don't live on my pension.
Yeah, I understand that.
I probably could if I got rid of some stuff. But then everyone, wherever you're, is entitled to have a coffee or you know, you, why can't you have some fun as well rather than just sit there?
With an ASO, you can't afford it. You shouldn't have it.
Yeah.
That's them, yeah.
No quality of life.
Yeah.
And that's why I try and be very patient with people who approach me in the street thinking they're in dire straits and I would hate to be in their situation.
That's right.
Some empathy.
But this problem's not going away. This problem is just going to mushroom.
Yeah, and that's the issue. Yeah, and it should have been, as I say, visionary to look at the fact that
they must have known 60-odd years ago.
I think, of course, I've
been crude here, but the contraception pill came along. That changed their whole birth rates.
Yeah.
Must have.
Changed life for women.
Then women could choose, families could choose, but women particularly, it's their bodies, they're the ones who have to have the baby, they could choose how many children they have, basically. Unless they had a really male in the household who dominated what they could do and not do.
A patriarch.
You still get it these days.
You still get it. But I'm just saying that must have changed our whole trajectory massively.
Societal mores, whatever you call it, turned on their head.
We haven't got a girl here to give her their side of the story, but
But it certainly was societal changes, eh? But they must have done projections.
I think that that's why Kirk had that super fund, didn't he?
I think that's based on
the projections.
But unfortunately, most governments are like most governments have kicked the problem down the road.
Okay,
that might be true, but we can wait for 10 years.
Somebody else's problem.
And now the problems are coming home.
Then worldwide, not just New Zealand, but we have to bring in migrants. Which you don't blame, because we need migrants to do the work because we're not replacing ourselves.
E.g. aged care.
So it just compounds, eh?
I have a proper read of it, the retirement
commission thing, because they're worth doing.
It's complicated. There's all sorts of things you try and bring together.
And what I always find really interesting is not just what they're talking about KiwiSaver, but actually the trajectories of age.
That's
what I find fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Those are good numbers.
That work done there is excellent.
You should have been a statistician.
in a numbers game,
being much so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What else you got there, Craig?
That's a watching your space thing, actually.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, so I put another one in here, the dirty dealings of New Zealand police.
Yes.
Skimming stuff.
The fall from grace.
Yeah. It's quite tragic because you need people of power and authority to do the right thing, because that's how you keep society together. Mm-hmm. You've got to respect the judge. If the judge tells you to be good and then goes off and hoons around and breaks the law, etc., you lose your respect.
Yeah.
Or you believe they get off because of their power, etc. And the police are the same. You have an expectation.
Mm.
You're a JP, Craig. People have an expectation of you that you're a good person.
That's what they. Yeah, that's expectation. Because there are challenges.
Some of you are Tories, so that's
that's a cross. No, but the more serious issues around integrity is if people give you money or give you a gift.
Off you,
that will just kind of tarnish the image.
Yeah.
Well, and to bring that up, I see, you know, we talked a little while back about the driver's instructors taking perks, bribes, asking for money to get people, for migrants, new migrants, to get their licenses. You remember we talked about that a few weeks back? Well, I see now they've disqualified 400 truck licenses because they were... They were false. Bogus. The information was false. When they handed in, they've got this...
Well, it doesn't surprise me, given some of the standards of driving I see on the roads these days.
But see, that's the... slippery
slope.
Adding to your argument, Craig, that's the slippery slope.
Yeah.
That it's just, oh, this is what we do. It the whole society, standard of society, you know, and then it becomes anything you want to get done, you know, you've got to put a folding note in the... And the documents.
I don't go to all JP stuff, but some meetings have discussed this. And we know JPs who are maybe from, not born in New Zealand, come from a different country where norms are just a little bit different.
Mm, yeah.
And
you're being polite.
Yeah, accepting money for services rendered is quite acceptable within that society.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that was a discussion point. Yeah, people leaving gifts. I got ambushed once.
Yeah.
Somebody left a gift there and just took off. And this was a hell.
Oh, did I leave my pen behind at your house?
Oh, no, that wasn't. No. Well, this is in the JP role.
Yeah. Yeah.
The person was from Asia. I remember the ethnicity. Yeah.
Yeah.
So different cultural norm.
Yeah,
I gave that gift up to somewhere else.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
and I probably said this before when doing JP work. I do it at work these days, not at home, because of Margaret's health and other things.
Yeah.
If they want to give a donation to the organisation, they're more than welcome.
Yeah,
I don't accept money.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly a slippery slope. Right?
Yeah. But we do hear those stories.
Yeah, well, just say that's you change societies and you change cultures, etc.
Because you get new immigrants coming in bringing that sort of culture, but then that culture's already here anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's people crossing people's palms with nudge, nudge, wink,
oh,
wink.
Oh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, won't look here. Yeah.
It's just more of the same, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they get highlighted because they're immigrants.
Well, see, the argument...
First you arrive in a country.
The argument why you should play, judges a lot, they pay them very well, they give them good pension schemes, they get very well looked
to
after.
To stop this sort of behaviour.
So there's the temptation for, you know, if you're struggling for money, the temptation is you'll do something.
But you set them up properly.
And the police are the same.
The idea was to spike their guns and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But going back to your point about the police officer, I mean, I was reading yesterday's paper, the police, all in rank and file, are not happy about the outcome of this.
Yeah. Well, it drags the reputation, reputational damage.
Their ability to interact with the community,
sort
of stuff.
It's sort of kind of, you remember the Shilton Sholem Rickard thing?
Yeah.
It's kind of in that similar boat, but probably.
I did the court case for that. I was the crier in that court case. Right.
What they were involved in, I think, because they were lower rank.
Yeah.
But they're still a
club.
Yeah.
But this current outfit with McSkivings and others, they're more senior.
Yeah.
But they still come in, and let's face it, my impression of the arms, you know, people in services, etc., fire brigade or the armed services, the police or whatever, is you're sort of trained to stick together, that it's you against the world. There's a bit of this closed ranks, which is done for their own. You know, they have to do some awful stuff at times, and not just once and that often. So they sort of have the police rugby team and the police darts club and so they would encourage that sort of sticking together. How do you break that from the professionalism of crossing the line?
Some very embarrassed faces at the ministry.
Well, and the media not letting it go either, so...
They're like rabid dogs.
And as you say, some senior officers didn't handle this very well.
Mm.
No.
Well, that colleague thing, team team attitude, I guess.
Yeah, close ranks,
you know.
Yeah, that's one. The other one is an overseas one. And it's a serious matter. It's to do with the civil war in the Sudan.
And
the massacres and stuff like that, and the accusations flying around who is actually arming the perpetrators. And Rubio is pointing the finger at the UAE, isn't it? Or Qatar.
I haven't followed it.
But I suspect that they're probably coming from other areas.
Cool.
It's just pointing, we'll just blame somebody. They could actually come from the United States. You never know. Yeah.
Well, you need to go back to that movie, The Lord of War, Nicolas Cage, you know, and just there's money in war. Huge amounts of money. Yeah. Just on that, just before I forget, because I just see there's a book out and it's called The $1 trillion War Machine by William Hartung.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically goes through how much money America makes out of war, out of weapons.
Yeah, so,
and it stays in America. It says, you know, you hear on TV, America's given $300 million to Ukraine this month or whatever. But they actually make the product in America, etc. It doesn't go out in $300 million in cash. So the American $300 million worth of aid, which is usually tanks and weapons,
While we're in the mood for recommending books, I can't give you the author, but I can give you the title. I'm currently reading a book that my history mentor has lent to me. I've had it for a while. Daniel Walter Reed, called White Malice.
It's
somebody who's investigated the CIA files. This tells us the CIA those who were involved in the murder of Patrice Lumumba, the elected leader. Of the Congo, and the removal from power of the elected leader of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah. And one thing that the book does say is that they, Eisenhower, the then president, endorsed the murder of Lumumba.
Sticky hands.
And you know why I raise that? The book's worth reading. I think it would be a recommend read. It's quite a big book. As the so-called murmurings of a plan to get rid of Maduro.
Yeah. Latin America is full of American plots. They've had sticky hands over, and probably have. A long time, haven't they?
The track record doesn't hold. Confidence.
Yeah, and because what also was significant was that it's 50 years since the sitting of the church committee into the activities of the CIA, they were looking in particular at some of those things. Lumumba was one of them.
This guy Hartung in his book talks a bit about how the military. People who are making all this money that they're virtually bypassing government. They're that powerful now that they're basically making the rules for what they do, which is quite scary. Yeah. Going back to Sudan, can you give us a bit of do you know much about it? Is it South Sudan or was it internal Sudan?
I think it's Sudan. It's Sudan itself.
Because it split up, didn't it? It was the newest country.
Yeah, I think, and you remember they had the Darfur issue a few years ago. And then there was the raising funds for Darfur. One of the funds was the
Darfur's in the north.
I think so.
Libya up that way.
And at the time they were raising funds for the people of Darfur. That was and one of the ones I do remember quite well was the album, the music album that was put together using the songs of John Lennon.
South Sudan, they split up, didn't they? Sudan is the newest independent country
in the world. Yeah, currently.
But so the fighting isn't in South Sudan; it's in Sudan
because the Darfur region
changing factions.
They've on tribal lines, I suppose. Is it?
Could possibly.
It's between two warlords, isn't it?
There's rapid
response force head, and then there's the head of the army. We've had a falling out And this is the result of absolute carnage and people
being murdered.
Well, and it sounds
raped, you know, murdered, burned, killed, you name it.
Yeah.
And they've the last year was I can't remember the name of the last city, was just recently taken, and apparently it's been a bloodbath.
Yeah, we just sat, kind of the West has
sat back and done really
nothing. Mind you, we sat back with Rwanda. Let's face it.
Sudan's the worst humanitarian crisis
on
the planet at the moment.
But let's face it, we saw Rwanda. What did the West do? Very little.
We've witnessed the Rohingya, same thing.
What did the West do? Palestine made plenty of attention, but what did the West do? And Sudan, you know, what's the West doing? Selling, probably selling indirectly. There'll be arms flows going through.
Oh, arm brokers will be going through.
As individuals.
Yeah, bring their hands together with the
hands thinking about the commission.
Yeah.
It's just who is arming the perpetrators. Rubio, as I said, just pointing the finger at.
Well, so this guy reckons it's just reached $1 trillion in America, and there's no end in sight of that.
No.
You know?
Well, world expansion arms is measured in trillions.
That's significant, isn't it?
And he also
talks about how military is changing. America has figured out that as long as you send the weapons of war, you don't send your troops.
So I
don't know if it'll happen, but I could see America gradually getting rid of some of its bases of troops. It doesn't need them. It just needs expertise.
Needs the materials and the means.
Yeah, to send over missiles or anything else. So then having 20,000 men stationed who just are grunts
is expensive.
That's probably going to disappear, I would think.
It's a sad situation. We allow this to happen.
If you want to have a look, they interviewed this guy, William Hartung, on Democracy Now. It's on today's post, so on YouTube.
I'll have a look at it. Yeah. I don't mind listening.
It was only a very short one, but he certainly knew his stuff.
Don't mind listening to Amy Goodwin, Juan Hernandez, and the other lady.
Yeah.
Don't mind listening to them. And the other point that I had was the regulatory standards bill was passed into law, unfortunately.
Oh, right.
And that's despite the overwhelming submissions being against it.
Yeah.
All I could call that was an ACT network, an Atlas Network ACT Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
It
just shows you though, you know when you're young and naive, you just that's the law. You know, you can't break the law. But as you get older, and if you, especially you follow it, you realise that the law is written by the powerful.
Yeah,
those in control.
Isn't it?
And we have some cross things like murder. Yeah, both sides, all sides. Murder's all murder.
Well, maybe not.
Some sentencing can be different.
Some individuals.
But you know what I mean. But as you get older, we realise that the law is made by those who control Parliament.
Oh, that wasn't us.
It wasn't us. Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yeah.
That's kind of me. But
can I go on to one?
By all means.
Going back to, we talked a bit earlier about, but Martin Gallagher just got recognised from the Hamilton City Council.
It was going to be the positive.
Martin's been a Labor MP.
So it's like a lifetime of service award sort of thing.
Yeah, and he actually gets a medal. It's called the Hamilton Kirikiriroa Medal.
Right.
As well. So I don't know what it looks like, but he's going to get it.
He sounds like a deserving candidate.
Yeah, we've met. Craig knows Martin very well. I've met him a few times.
Well, he was on the radio.
I think you've met him once or twice here.
Yeah.
So what I call, a moderate Labor man, but decent human being, which is all you can expect. Prepared to listen to all sides. What would you like to say about it, Craig?
Martin. He's we used to run the show prior to the one that was before this.
Many decades ago.
Yeah, but I've always liked Martin because he's open.
Yes, what I mean.
He's approachable. That's approachable. And that's what we've found with Martin over the years. I had some concerns. Well, the first time I met him, I had some concerns about some issue. That was the first time I met him. And he came over to our place.
Yeah. 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 No, good. So, you know, credit's deserved. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think even Mayor Tim McIndoe and all that, you know, they all know, a lot of people do know from whatever side you vote for or anything else, probably all consider him a decent human being.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, that's my, that's the positive.
You got stuff there, Mick, is any of your stuff relates to the Te Pāti Māori?
Funny enough.
Because I think we could have a bit of a...
We've done the positive.
There's two articles. There we are. Well, this is in the Herald on Tuesday. Te Pāti Māori exposed two MPs after months of internal division. At the same, remember, at the same time, Labour's plans to push TPM out of Parliament. So what's going on here then, guys? Because there seems to be infighting on one level, and Labour's trying to, giving the impression that Labour's trying to push Te Pāti Māori out.
Well, you remember last week I sort of hinted at it, but in the end, if Te Pāti Māori implodes or gets a lot of bad flak, etc., and they won't implode because they have electoral seats, so...
that'll be to Labour's benefit, you reckon?
It will be, because Luxon was going, I don't care stuff about Te Pāti Māori. You know, it's been quite belittling to Te Pāti Māori.
I know.
Milk in the moment.
Yeah.
But I think from a Labour perspective, if Te Pāti Māori has troubles, or is in trouble and it doesn't recover from that... I would think Labour would be the sitting recipient of voters who are disappointed with Te Pāti Māori.
Yeah.
And they would pick it up. I don't think Te Pāti Māori voters are going to go over the Nats or ACT.
No.
Would that be a fair comment?
Well, I think it's mentioned that there's been a history of people voting for the Māori Party also voting for Labour when...
Yeah, of course. They split their votes. Known in the Māori world, if there's two Māori candidates and under, MMP, that often they would say, well, look, you can have two for the price of one. You can have vote Labour for the list or vote for the electorate, and you can vote Te Pāti Māori for the other way around, vice versa.
Yeah, they still didn't say why these two have been expelled.
Yeah.
Apart from saying, oh, they've infringed party rules, okay, fine, but what was the infringement?
Yeah, well, what's under wraps or what's under investigation or whatever else? I think there's a lot of allegations flying around, I'll say that. But allegations and you're not guilty.
That suits the press, though.
Of course
trial by press.
Well, and of course, I say, we saw Luxon milk in the moment. And I say, even to Labour goes, well, we're distancing ourselves. Everyone's going to distance themselves from it because there's potentially votes in it. Yeah. But it's sad for the Pāti Māori and those inherents, because the worst sort of, you get attacked by the opposition is one thing, but when you're attacked by within... Or you have a struggle within, like a coup.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, that hurts you. That hurts, I think.
Yeah. So the issue, it all started with Kapa Kingi's son, didn't it?
That's what we were talking about this before he came in here.
Yeah, he's quite outspoken and everything else. And he's the son of one of the MPs.
And was he in a position to...
Well, it's a grey area, so...
it's not been proven.
No, there's no proof. Okay.
Yeah, alleged.
But it's been flying around that he was working for the electorate, because they're all... Te Pāti Māori MPs are electorate MPs.
Yeah, all of them,
okay.
So the implication by the press is that he's gained from that.
Certain members of the press, I'd say, but not all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only a claim.
It's only a claim.
The mud's flying
about what was going on. But of course, you know, certain factions have enjoyed it, which is always strange. When Māori get in trouble for anything like that or allegations like that, it seems to make main news.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, what's the name of our local Māori MP up here?
Nanaia
Mahuta. You know, there was a bit of flack about one of her cousins doing something and all that. And that made big news. Do we get the same, do we get the same thing about New Zealand European?
No, not really. It seems
we can do, but
it's not to the same depth.
It doesn't seem that way.
And not for the same period of time of digging and probing.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that way. We may be wrong, but yeah.
I think it kind of is, because we had, you remember the Hamish Campbell issue of that religion?
Mm.
He was at Christchurch National MP.
Oh,
was his name Campbell?
Hamish Campbell, yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. Is he also the same Hamish Campbell that got people trespassed because of the Palestinian protest down there?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but that went very quiet very quickly.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like anything, that hopefully they sorted out. But I say, it's in all parts. The Nats have never had to. They've never had to worry about. They've just made pot shots at Te Pāti Māori anyway, because they're not their voting pool.
Yeah.
But Labor, of course, is in that position that it doesn't want to appear too hard on Te Pāti Māori because it might survive.
Same as want to be seen to be cozying up.
And that's what we saw that when the same time Luxon was giving them Te Pāti Māori quite a hard time. Even what's the name of our fella, the Labor guy.
Tipkins.
Yeah. He was saying, "Oh no, they haven't approached us." He was also distanced themselves from it. Poison chalice at this moment.
But I guess one point, it's come out now, so it gives Te Pāti Māori some time, hopefully, to recover before.
Because
the elections next year. So
I said that last week is. What could happen is some of these electorates that Māori may well vote because of the kinship or of their local candidate.
Yeah.
So they might, you know, in the European world, I guess, I want to say the predominantly Pākehā world, it would be like, okay, you're the MP for this. If there's a fallout, they don't want you to vote for them, probably people wouldn't. But that might not follow up north where they go, actually, she's a whanaunga or we all know who she is.
Closer connection.
So they could well go, well, I'm going to form my own Mana Mutahaki type party and still get voted in. Yeah.
Somebody's done some work here because it's Labour plans to push Te Pāti Māori out. It talks about Kapakingi. His son, Eru, a former vice president who led the Taitu Te Tiriti protest movement, then publicly declared the movement split from Te Pāti Māori, calling its leadership a dictatorship. After the reset, 4 weeks later, the party sent an unsigned email to members alleging that Kapakingi was overspending her parliamentary budget by $133,000 and that Eru Kapakingi had been barred from Parliament after an incident with security staff. I just wonder if something's been exposed and Eru is feeling very uncomfortable.
It's not good, but innocent
of proven guilty, but it seems to be that these things coming together and then something must have been said.
Been picked up or something.
So there might be more to...
More than that. And I think instead of this fighting it out...
In public, the
media stuff. If the media was going to do their job properly, they would closely scrutinise this part.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's... I think because we've just had this discussion now. There's a lot of loose ends.
Yeah, and this is one of
the implications. And everyone's sort of... Everyone's presuming this or presuming that, or that's a danger when we don't quite know.
And that's one of the loose strings that's quite important, I would say.
Yeah.
And with the media focusing, but you could basically say Maori bashing,
Well, that's the tragedy of it.
Yeah, that's what's
happening. You know.
Yeah.
But it's the tragedy of Te Pāti Māori, you know, when you get going. Mm. And from my perspective, as a, you know, I've been pushing the Palestinian cause, Te Pāti Māori have been very strong supporters of the pro-Palestine, of trying to do something for the Palestinian people and what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah.
Because of that connection of being colonised and knowing all about
Indigenous rights stuff, So that's an interesting one. I think the media have not done their job properly on that one. Speculatory, circumstantial.
Well, hopefully it does get clear. And Mick's right. At least there's some time. Everything will go to sleep a bit over Christmas and...
Maybe give them time to gather the forces.
People start talking, get it resolved,
and so it becomes a done deal, and it's all.
Well, that's what you'd like as a timeline of what's happened.
Yeah, it's all done, dusted.
But you know, thing is, unless you get everyone agreeing to it, a summary of facts sort of thing, then you even go, "Oh no, that's not what happened," and then you get this whole fog of
the festering wound they keep picking up.
Yeah.
Well, Maori are good at having hui. So they have the
maybe they might get it thrashed out there.
Yeah, that one.
Well, they tried, and they did try to hit. They had a hurry before they were expelled.
To try and
settle it, but it didn't work.
Yeah, Batem. That's what Batem Barber was there, isn't he?
Yeah. I've got something to pay for it.
Yep.
Chile is having their presidential elections. I think on Sunday. It's very close. And it's quite an interesting one because there's actually the front runners is actually a communist party member, Jeanette Jara, and she's actually been in the governing coalition, etc. But she's still an active member of the Communist Party.
Right.
But she's running a ticket on affordability, cost of living, etc.
Yeah.
But she's up against, I think, there's seven other candidates. Initially, I think there's eight in the race so far. And then if they don't get a clear majority, they go to a runoff. Only goes to the closest one. So she's up against two front runners on the right, both of them, Jose Antonio Kast and Johannes Kaiser. They're right-wing parties. And they are pushing the fear factor.
They're
pushing crime, migration, security.
Yeah.
Typical right wing.
Same old.
But what's really I found was interesting, it just caught my ear, was that it's compulsory voting. And from an initial thing, that's really great. But I just listened to she's a very good reporter from Al Jazeera, she does the Latin America. She's very good. But she said, actually, over in there, documented migrants also will
vote.
Oh yeah,
and they've had several hundred thousand. I can't remember if she had 200,000 or 300,000 Venezuelans who don't like the socialist government in Venezuela.
So
now
Chile.
Live in Chile.
And they get to vote
because they're documented.
So that could be dangerous then.
Well, that's what they said. This having that block, and if they've come out of it's a bit like all the Cubans in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
not their land bag, all still sulking about Fidel Castro and Che Guevara's, you know.
So these foreigners can vote in these
as long as they're documented, yeah. And it's compulsory voting.
That's a bit scary.
Well, but, I suppose they're saying they're living here, they've documented.
You go back to those two right-wing candidates, they're pushing the fear factor. Was one of those migrants?
Yeah, crime, migration, security.
That'd be quite interesting. Would these migrants actually vote for them?
Well, they could because we've seen that in America with the right movement, that a lot of people that are already in America don't want any more.
Yeah, so their voters are very people you think they wouldn't vote for.
Yeah. But. So watch the space.
Yeah.
But so,
I didn't realize that.
So if there's not a clear winner...
It goes to a runoff
on December the 14th.
What do they mean? What's a clear winner there?
If you get a majority of 50%, like Kamam Dani.
And if you don't,
the top two
candidates.
What are the percentages looking like currently? You know,
what did I say? I did actually have a brief look. She is very popular, but they're all about 16% and 20% and all that. So there's no clear. But she'd be very popular because she's obviously got some practical experience. Amongst the poor, etc. And she grew up, in a poor family, etc.
But she's a rarity, though, and a candidate putting herself for office who's a member of the Communist Party.
Well, she didn't even think she'd be allowed to stand by their rules or something.
Yeah.
But she is
a rarity, though, isn't it? I mean,
so she's got a good chance of doing well in the first elections.
When it comes around to the next.
But the second one, if there's eight candidates and most of them are right wing. And it goes down to one right-wing candidate and her.
Yeah,
she's going to be up against the all vote, a block vote on the right.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting that they about that. I thought, okay, big block of right-wing Venezuelans are in there.
So you said there were eight.
So compulsory vote is not the complete perfect answer we thought it might be.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm getting at. I thought that'd be good. You know, I'm a real believer in compulsory voting.
It's the same situation in Australia, because it's compulsory voting there. They wouldn't have things like immigrants.
Well, you can buy once you've got your citizenship.
Yeah, as long as you're a citizen, yeah.
But documented migrants could mean anything.
Well, yeah. That could mean, we don't know what that means over there. It could mean,
yeah,
your type of, obviously you're allowed to vote. They've obviously passed it in law. Mm-hmm. But it's quite interesting. Yeah. The clip on this Al Jazeera thing was that they're getting lots of wealthier people from Argentina, Kishu. They all go into Chile to shop.
Yeah, cheap.
Because it's cheap compared to Argentina.
Yeah.
So, you know, those have always got the way of getting out. So they're not even the wealthy, aren't shopping at home.
No.
Well, yeah,
they're shopping somewhere else.
To spot all the rhetoric back in Milo. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going where the money is.
Just shows you.
Yeah, they're a pack of liars.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. It'd be interesting to see what the result. Do you reckon the elections come up this weekend?
I've got a feeling it's on. Out them, it'll be out our Monday, their Sunday.
Yeah.
It's very, right. There's a bit of in about it.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I'll have to keep, something that Al Jazeera will probably pick up on anyway, so.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Isn't the current leader socialist for Chile?
Yeah, at present, it's at what we call it a centre-left coalition. I think it's called Unity for Chile. Is a coalition of sort of moderates. Slightly on the left. And that's where she's from. She's been a cabinet minister and all that. She's got experience, yeah. Etc. So, and you say, so far, the peasantry love her, but because she's saying affordability. So she's running along a Mamdani type campaign, whereas the others are just, you know, we've got to protect what's ours. You know,
they don't look about
for fear mongering.
Okay. So we just keep an eye on that.
It will be interesting, and I say won't be very clear, but it'll be interesting
for the runoff.
Even if she gets into the top two.
I just wondered where those Venezuelans went in respect of not liking Maduro.
Well, I always thought that too. You know, people tend to, you know, it's like Cuba.
Mm.
Where did they all go? They went to Florida, and now they moan about Cuba all the time. Yeah. And they put the pressure on the United States government not to keep the embargoes, all that.
Mm.
I imagine there'd be Venezuelans in Florida as well.
I suspect that's correct.
If they have dual passports or money.
And I think there's right-wing Chileans in there as well, because didn't they haul out of Florida one of the people wanted, it was tied up with Pinochet last year for trial?
That's right.
Yeah, and that was under Biden. I don't think it would have happened under Trump.
Yeah. Watch the space on that one.
Got anything else in, Mick?
It's been an embarrassing week for the BBC. I take it people have listened to the fact that.
Is it a positive that they're embarrassed?
Well, it's one of a bittersweet, I think. But
it's almost a positive, because I'm glad it's finally something big has happened.
Mm.
Because what the BBC has done, and they've admitted they've done it, is they've spliced together one big story and
two moments of the same speech.
And they spliced them together.
Given the impression that he was inciting them to riot.
Yeah, from January the 6th, about the Capitol riots. So,
The edited speech appeared in the Trump, A Second Chance episode of the documentary series Panorama.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, so
some very embarrassed faces.
Well,
and it's been the report I heard yesterday was that there were accusations that the same culture then entered into coverage in Gaza and other places.
Jeremy Corbyn, the issue of bias. So this is a bit more dirty than that, but it's got more story to run, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, unfortunately. And on that note, it's negative for the BBC, not us. We're out of here. And you'll find us on freefm.org.nz or just check our podcast there.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.